until a chairperson arrives.
Thank you. Hello, is there anybody there?
Hi, Chris here.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Fred Nolan.
Hi, everybody. This is Bill Hoffman with Connect Minnesota and the Broadband Task Force. We're running a little bit behind. Apologies for that. The demo of the telelearning here at Deer River High School has gone a little long. They should be wrapping up in the next 3 to 5 minutes, so I apologize that we weren't in the room with the line open. Everybody should be back in about 3 minutes. I'm going to keep the line open, and thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, Bill. Hey, Bill?
Yeah.
This is Fred Nolan. About an hour and a half ago, I sent some printed remarks to Matt Gross. I don't know if he's able to get them and just forward them on to the task force or whatever, but I sent my remarks to him. So.
Okay, thank you. I haven't talked to him about it, but he certainly can forward it on to everybody for sure.
That's what I kind of thought.
Great, thanks. And Bill, we should be with you momentarily, so thank you.
Okay. Hey, Jennifer, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Fred.
Hi.
I wasn't able to attend the assessment task force or working group's first meeting.
Okay.
And I got a message that said I was supposed to get something in the mail. Has that gone out, do you know?
I don't know. Rose Hermanson would be the best person to ask about that.
Okay. All right. I'll do that. That will work.
Okay.
So I figured you would start that up after you got the test out and all of that, so you'd have a minute to get a breather. It's been really busy for you down there, I bet.
I'm not sure I've had a breather yet, but, fortune
yes.
favors the bold.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Who's on? Is Fred on?
Yeah, Fred's on.
Yep.
Kurt, are you on?
I'm always on.
Yeah, good. Sorry for the delay.
Thanks, Kurt.
It's all right.
Sorry for the delay.
All right. Well, do you want to start this one off?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, our table's got it. I got to get it. I'm going to have you come sit along that side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Fred. Hi, Kurt. This is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Are you guys in a boat someplace?
I wish.
I wish. Okay. So Matt's going to take over here since he's
sure.
moderating.
I'm sure. I'm moderating.
Because the focus of today is we heard some tribal issues this morning and this afternoon. We're going to be having a panel on educational issues or concerns or perspective on broadband. And so joining us on the phone are Jennifer Dugan from the Minnesota Department of Education, Fred Nolan, former superintendent in Foley, and now director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and Kurt Trigestad, who is now the superintendent in Eden Prairie. And then I have two of my colleagues, Joe Silko from Grand Rapids and IAS Group, and Mark Adams from Nashwauk and Greenway, to talk about the impact that broadband is having, should have, could have, and some of the issues or concerns that they see. And Jennifer, I know that Diane was in contact with you about some things potentially that might be interesting to the panel. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Could you expand a little bit on some of those questions or comments that Diane had sent you?
Sure, and I'll be brief. I unfortunately have another meeting that I must attend at 2 o'clock, so I'll try to be brief. So a little bit of a philosophy or history of us moving online with the assessment. We wanted to be sure that when we were moving online that we were utilizing or maximizing the technology, and so that there was a reason for that. And then also we started out with more limited populations. So, for example, our math test for English language learners was an online assessment that was first operational in 2007. We did have some difficulties administering that first year, even though that was a more limited population. But we definitely learned from those experiences. And then the science MCAs, which are only administered in grades 5, 8, and high school, so it's not grades 3 through 8 and high school, such as the math and reading are. So those science MCAs in grades 5, 8, and high school have always been administered online, and those assessments first went operational in 2008. That is a very technologically heavy assessment. There's audio, there is video. The science assessments were, again, wanting to maximize that technology. They wanted that to be as real life as possible and to replicate being in a science simulation lab experience as much as possible. And so that's science MCAs were the first MCAs to go online. The math and reading grad, which is the graduation required assessment for diploma tests, have been administered online monthly since 2008. Those tests, the reason we went online for those was for ease of administration so that we could provide them out to the students as soon as they were eligible, and so those testing windows are monthly. They are multiple choice, but the math does take advantage of audio. So again, wanting to make sure that we were maximizing that technology getting to the district as quickly as possible and not having that delay with having to turn around the test books every month. And then 2011 was our first real math MCA assessment in grades 3 through 8. So last spring, 3 through 8, districts actually had the option to determine the administration mode at a school level. But again, those math MCAs utilized the technology-enhanced item types and also provided audio to those students. So that's a little bit of a history. Are there any questions before I move into kind of all of the different assessments that we now offer online and the feedback we've gotten?
Yeah, Jennifer, this is Matt. Can you talk about some of the feedback or challenges that districts had as they migrated from paper pencil tests to online. And just for context for the group that's here, the test that Jennifer is referring to, those are our state-required tests, many of which are a consequence or a result of No Child Left Behind. So they're required assessments. But could you talk a little bit about the feedback that you received from districts and how they were handling that transition from paper pencil to online?
Sure. There was a technology work group that was convened here. I'm trying to remember now. I think it was back in 2006. At MDE, it was not specific to testing. It was to find out really what infrastructure and hardware is out in the district. I think a lot of the feedback that we've actually gotten is more around the actual computer, not as much around the broadband, about the connectivity, and I can speak to that a little bit more in a moment. We also have, keeping with the task force and the feedback route, we have a technology work group that meets, depending on the time of year. Sometimes they meet monthly, sometimes they meet quarterly. Just depends on the burning issues at hand. But those the people that serve on that technology work group are have a variety of contexts. So some of them are metro, some of them are very rural, some of them are Mac heavy districts, some of them are PC heavy districts. So we think we've worked really hard to make sure that to the extent possible, while not including every single technology person in every single district, we've got a range of representation on that committee. So the piece about the hardware, I remember last year we made the decision we wanted to increase the screen real estate so that we could have test questions that had more answer options on the technology enhanced. And so we kind of polled our technology work group folks and talked with some of our other district assessment coordinators about what hardware was out there in the district. And again, I think the hardware is actually in some cases the competing factor there because of time in the computer labs and the concern about taking away from instruction. The previous vendor that we had administering the Minnesota assessment had one system under which the tests were downloaded to a local server, and then so you had the test downloaded within each school, so you weren't calling out on the internet. So in that respect, it was really important that the connection between that server, be that in that school or at the central office, that connection be very sound, but they weren't necessarily needing to get out there and be the equivalent of searching on the website, on Wikipedia or that kind of thing. The vendor that we have now administering our assessment does have a web-based test administration system. And so as the students are taking the test, they are going outside of the district infrastructure, if you will, and calling on that server at the testing company. And in our technology procedures manual, it says that the average test can consume up to 45 kilobits per second while they are downloading. And then that's per student, but that's while they're downloading. And then goes on to say, after startup, bandwidth usage drops to approximately 10K bits per second per student. So there's when the student is first logging on, we're verifying that we've got the right student in front of the right test, and they're getting those first few questions. That's very heavy. And that's at 45 to 60K bits per second per student. But then after that, and they're in the test and they're answering, it drops dramatically after that.
And can you, back, and some of the superintendents will remember this, back when there was the larger push for online learning, the legislature gave some dollars to school districts to help make that transition. Is that correct, Jennifer? Do you remember that?
I was not directly involved with that, no.
Fred or Kurt, do you remember what, I think it was $50 per pupil unit for a period of time?
Matt, this is Kurt. I think it was $50 for 2 years, and then I believe that sunsetted out of the budget, if my memory serves me right.
All right, thanks, Kurt.
I think Kurt is right. That was several years ago, and it was only for a limited period of time.
Any questions for Jennifer?
If Jennifer could provide, I know she wanted, but we stayed a little too long in the other room in terms of seeing the technology. Jennifer, if you want to provide the list of assessments that are done online in writing to us, that would be quite helpful. I think you were communicating with Diane about this, so giving them to Diane would be perfect in terms of our reporting and what we're working on.
I have a question to the task force. I know that the No Child Left Behind legislation is under review, and I'm wondering if anybody up to speed on what changes, if any, we're anticipating assessment requirements might impact the state of Minnesota in our zone.
We have a waiver now out of the existing, so I'm sure there's going to be changes that we can.
I'm not sure. I know I didn't hear the entire question, so I'm not sure what I'm responding to. But the waiver does not alter the administration of the assessment. The waiver alters the accountability system after the test results are collected.
Right. It's more about how schools are treated, how districts are treated, the whole system of labeling and fresh starts and things like that. Okay. We're going to go next.
Thanks, Jennifer. Anything else for Jennifer? Fred, you're to the left of Jennifer up here on my table. Your name tent is, so I'm going to go to you next. If you could speak from your perspective about the importance of high-speed internet to your role, I guess, as a superintendent when you were in Foley, in that environment, and in your perspective now, for sure, I guess most importantly, as a director of an association of rural schools, what your perspective is on broadband access in those schools and the importance of it.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, and hello to all the panelists, and I appreciate your this time. And Matt, if you've got your internet up there, your email, I emailed you some printed remarks about noon, and you can forward them on to everybody. At least they'll have them in print either while I'm speaking or afterwards. So, and for those who don't know, Minnesota Rural Education Association is an association of about 150 rural school districts all across greater Minnesota, from very small to larger districts like Bemidji, Grand Rapids, and tries to put the learners first in rural Minnesota. And my perspective, after going around the state and talking to many superintendents and principals, as well as having been in rural education for over 30 years, is that broadband connectivity is the transformational transportation infrastructure of the 21st century, similar to the railroads of the 19th century and the interstate of the 20th century. And I know that's an overused metaphor, but I think it's worth mining that metaphor, and we'll come back to it. In education, that transformation at the K-12 level is really moving to more of a blended education, where you have face-to-face communications with teachers and students together, and have online and digital education where it's asynchronous and it's, you know, just in time, et cetera. But I don't think in K-12 we're ever going to go totally online for the majority or even the vast majority of students, because you've got to realize, you know, teenagers are social animals and adolescents are social animals, and learning those social skills that we get when we work together and kind of rub shoulders, that I don't think you're going to get in a totally virtual world. But I think blended ed has some real great possibilities, and some examples are already many districts have the electronic submission of student work, and certainly communication with parents and students is ongoing on email, and even some districts are moving into Facebook to be able to communicate with parents. Jennifer Dugan's department turned out a tremendous science test. If you haven't seen that science test, I'd have you take a look at it for the possibilities, as she called it, a technology-heavy environment for online assessment. You perhaps have heard of flipped classrooms, where teachers are videotaping and videotaping the lecture so students can see that lecture at any time, and they can do the work in the classroom with the teacher there to correct errors, monitor errors, and make corrections and instruction. That's going on in colleges a lot with videotaped lectures. Stanford University is going into that. And I also think in Foley, we looked at the four-day week. We didn't go to the four-day week, but I saw some great potential there for blended education, because the teachers have the potential of more collaborative planning time, and that one day a week the secondary students aren't coming into school, they can have a rich online lesson, task, project to do that's due before they come back on that, say, Tuesday or if they're off on Monday. So I saw some real potential there to actually have a richer education than a strictly face-to-face education where the teacher's in front of kids 5 days a week, has very little preparation time to really create rich lessons. So I think those are just four examples. Kurt and has others, and you've seen the telepresence, which is awesome. And I know that Joe Silka and Matt Gross were very involved in that. So there's all kinds of examples. But the issues statewide are, how do we create enough adequacy of bandwidth and computer technology in general, but bandwidth specifically, because that's your charge, and equity of that access all across the state, so all students have Minnesota's constitutionally guaranteed education. Minnesota has a constitutional phrase about education in the Constitution. So I think it's a really fundamental task of the state to make sure that all students have access. And there's two specific issues. One is the access to the actual school district. Now, in my travels across the state, I've only found one school district that has an issue with this, and it's a big issue. They literally cannot get more than 10 megs of access for the entire district, and this is a spread-out district in several different towns, okay, from their provider, and they have worked hard to get up from 5 megs a year ago. And the superintendent was pretty frustrated when she was telling me when the eighth graders were taking the science test that Jennifer was describing, she had to shut down all other internet access in the entire district. Students, district office principals, everybody had to stay out. So she had enough bandwidth, and even then, the system crashed numerous times with her eighth graders on the line. And the other issue that many districts' superintendents talked to me about is the access from the homes. The minute the kids leave the school building, it's like they have zero access. As one rural superintendent told me, even in St. Paul, they can go walk to a public library or take a bus to a public library. Here they have no options, simply because there isn't the broadband out there. And if it is, it's more expensive than many parents can afford, but in large cases, it's not even present. Those issues are what I hope you're wrestling with as a panel. And I'd like to propose some policy recommendations you should think about. Let's stop there for a minute before I go on. Are there questions on the use and some of the equity issues I've asked about? Silence. What happened?
Go ahead, Gary.
Fred Gary Evans from Winona. When you talk about the equity of access, is that across districts or in mostly rural areas, very let's say, farmstead areas of districts, or is it towns and farmstead areas?
Well, I know of one district, as I talked about, and that is the towns and the farmsteads. And yes, that's a rural farming community, several rural farming communities. The home access is actually more up in your area where around Deer River. It's in the areas that are in the woodsy parts of the state. And there's, you know, the roads are curving. There's long distances between homes. There's actually seems to be more issues, I would say, north of Highway 10 in that regard than in southern Minnesota. In southern Minnesota, the access is there, but the price may be too pricey but the home access specifically is coming, in, from my estimation, in northern Minnesota, north central northern Minnesota.
Thank you.
But it's also some places, actually, believe it or not, in some suburbs around St. Cloud, where a very large telecom has a huge access, okay, but it doesn't see, it's a multi-state telecom, it doesn't see the economic advantage in putting DSL into even mediumly distributed what I'd call suburban areas. So it's not just a rural area for homes. And I know that there was some work a few years ago on getting a map of broadband access throughout the state. I was working with my county on that and getting informed about that. And this was when I was in Benton County. And there were some tremendous gaps on the east side of Benton County in the Sauk Rapids School District.
Okay, Bernadine has a question.
Hi, Fred. Sure. Bernadine with Atlanta Foundation. Quick question in terms of best practices. Are you aware of any particularly rural districts that are using connectivity on school buses? A lot of students have to travel, spend a lot of time on buses to get back and forth. Aware of any?
Yes, hotspot. Yeah, right. Putting a hotspot on a bus.
Yeah.
Be honest with you, I don't know. We looked into that in Foley specifically for our athletic buses, which, you know, had to travel an hour to an hour and a half to games. And we're working with our telco for that and never quite finished the deal. Maybe Joe or Kurt would know, but I did read in Education Week about some districts in Arizona that were going very much into hotspots on buses. I think that's an excellent use of technology, I think, especially on athletic buses, because we have those high school kids on those buses a lot in the evenings and then expect them to be ready for school the next day.
So,
hi, Brent and Kurt and
hi, Jim.
Have two things that I would like to mention that I think have been brought up already, but I would like to maybe give some examples. I don't want to give solutions. That's probably the broadband task force.
Okay, we'll take suggestions, though. We like suggestions.
To the access issue, he's very right. It's a rural, primarily, there's some spots in the metro, more populated areas, but it is a very much a rural issue. And I don't know. I know we have the commercial communication people at the table. On this panel, but we can somewhat access, you know, cell phone towers, whether you incentivize access to those, to making communication from tower to tower. When I run 56 bus routes every day, and I've got kids getting on the bus at 6, and we start school at 8:30, there are a good solid 4 hours of, frankly, dead time.
Yeah.
They're sleeping on the buses, they're poking the little neighbors, they're doing whatever, but they are an opportunity where, I asked his investigator this. We talked about creating CAN curriculum on Netflix or iPads and CAN programming and math games and that sort of stuff. But that's engaging. You know that yourself if you've raised children. That's engaging to only a certain point the first time through it, or maybe the second time through it. Then they need to constantly be actively engaged, and if the task force, and somehow recommended the governor, that the governor and the powers that be incentivize commercial television and commercial cell tower people to provide broadband out, because we can't afford that. We can't afford to do that as school districts, but it's the only way we're going to get at some of our rural neighbors. And we know, frankly, that it's not profitable for the companies to do that, and when they can't afford it. But the technology is there. How do we do that? And you know, it's whether we used to do it with farming. We provided incentives to farming to make sure that we had enough farmers providing the grain, the milk, et cetera, for the population. And I think that same sort of the grain and milk, the food and stuff that we have, technology is that today to our country. And we need to provide incentives to make what is already out there out to kids and families. And frankly, it's very frustrating that we're still talking about it. It's extremely frustrating. As an educator, it's extremely frustrating. And we need to get past the part of talking about it and express that frustration to the powers that be, because the fixes are out there. And the second thing I'd like to talk about is the incentives versus penalties. The penalties that we get when we don't have kids testing the right way. Jennifer, excuse me, about an MBE, and so then things don't get kicked right, and we get penalized and put on this program or put on that program for things that maybe weren't even in our control. So there are a lot of... you have to look at that, I think, primarily an incentive or penalized access or issue, and the whole access issue. And I think a lot of that would turn itself out.
Thanks, Joel. I'm gonna move to Kurt. Kurt, one of the reasons I thought you'd be excellent on this panel is because of the diverse roles you've had in the last few years. Kurt was the chair of Infinity Online, which is a organization that was kind of co-birthed between Itasca area and down by the Brainerd area to provide supplementary online programming for kids. And so he was the chair of that group for a number of years. He was the superintendent in Little Falls and now in Eden Prairie. So he has a variety of perspectives. And Kurt, if you could share kind of your perspectives on the importance of connectivity, how you've seen it change, maybe expand on the ideas you've heard today.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Thank you, Task Force, for inviting me. As I was listening to the other speakers, I began to feel old, because when Jennifer talked about the Task Force in 2006, I actually was on that. And so I've kind of been around and been a part of the conversations moving forward to the present time. I think another perspective that I bring is, in the last 10 years, I've moved from a superintendent in a school of 1,100 to one with 2,500, now one with 10,000. And frankly, I'm seeing the same issues everywhere I go. So I think there's some commonalities that we can speak out there. The other role that I play is I have been serving on the Online Learning Advisory Committee that the commissioner appointed me a couple of years ago. And there's a number of us, including Jennifer, that serve on that, that have been talking about the same things you're looking at, the connectivity. How do we get kids involved and make sure it's valid and reliable and is good coursework? So that's just to kind of give you an idea of my perspective. Matt mentioned the Infinity Online. Just so you know, that did start between Vital and NCOLA. It was two small consortiums of 7 to 10 schools each. They joined together, and today I believe it's up to about 47 schools that are a joint powers organization. Started out serving about 200 kids, and now this past year the organization served 1,100. So you can see incredible growth in the people and students wanting access to programs. I do think that a great amount of those students are probably doing their access to the coursework through the school building somehow. I know there's some work at home, but I don't believe that it's primarily out of the building, so to speak. So it's a great thing. It's anywhere, anytime, and we've had great success, and I think kids will continue to look for that. The other perspective, one of the other perspectives, is being a member of a local education district that provided ITV to 9 schools. And some of the issues that we dealt with there, I think Mid-State is unique in the fact that it owns its own fiber. They actually buried it back in the early 80s. So we don't pay a whole lot for access, but we do end up paying a lot for the upkeep. And I think in the end, it's probably about the same. But the issues that we ran into there trying to run our own system, it was somewhat isolation, and we'd have to go through some of the regional hubs like St. Cloud State or Central Lakes to be able to connect anywhere else in the state. While it could be done, it was difficult at times and often unreliable. Another thing that we really struggled to try to create was redundancy. That particular fiber line runs from Long Prairie all the way to Isle in a single strand with no back loop. And therefore, if there's a gopher that chews through the fiber in Bolas, half of the group is out. So, and it happens about twice a year. So we have to look for ways, I think, to help organizations like that create a redundancy to make sure that they can continue to provide service. The one good thing about it is a great deal of cooperation when you get schools working together that way. That particular group has tried to do some interesting things. They have written 2 different grants to try to either do a wireless system across 3 counties or to enhance the current system and connect out. But fortunately, both of those federal grants were not funded, as many are. But I think the future there for those small consortiums is looking for ways to connect to other consortiums in order to improve not only service but access for multiple school districts and students across the state. The last perspective I'd like to share comes from Little Falls. We, last year, kind of hit the news, I guess, if you want to call it that, when we decided we were going digital with grades 5 through 12. And so we had worked for 3 years to create our own internal system and also get the bandwidth to a point where we knew that we could support, you know, up to 2,000 devices working simultaneously, and that's what happens in those buildings every day. We had some interesting finds as we went through the survey process. As I understand, Little Falls is about 50% free and reduced population, so it's not a wealthy socioeconomic area, but we did have a couple of things working for us. CenturyLink, which was Quest, has a pretty fair DSL network there, but we also were a test market for Clearwater, so there was a fairly robust Clearwire wireless system there. And the Upsala Telco also was very aggressive in getting fiber to the home. So we were very surprised when we surveyed our high school students and found that upwards of 90% of them had access to high-speed internet at home. But after we did a little further digging, a fair amount of those responses were based on smartphones. And so it wasn't truly to the house. It was more the wireless. So as far as inside school and the bandwidth, they said we had 1,700 students with iPads in their buildings. We found some just tremendous things changed for us. And Fred mentioned a lot of the positives. But it changed how students connect with teachers. The best story that I can share with you is a particular fifth grade teacher who said that he would get texts and emails on his iPad. And I was students asking, you know, how do I do this or what's due? He said, in my 20 years of prior teaching, I've never had a student pick up a phone and call me and ask that. And so I think we created some ways for students and teachers to connect. I know that we saw extensions of school day. With the people that had the ability to get online at home. We've got kids doing their own research and doing their own reports, not fired, but making up their own reports and coming and wanting to share with the other students at school. So in the end, toward the end of last year, we did have to, because of bandwidth concerns and this stability, we had to actually go out and get a second provider to bring in a second 100 megabit pipe. And so we have a failover safe situation now where if one goes down, the other one picks up. Because that's one of the downsides to going the digital way that we did, is that if you don't have that connectivity and you don't have the internet, you really are dead in the water. Students and teachers are afraid they can talk and they can do whatever they need to do. Don't get me wrong, but it does affect their education. So, and I just wanted to answer the athletic question too. I jotted down. We actually did put hotspots on our athletic buses last year, and this isn't a plug for any company, but we found the Verizon, the government accounts, we could get unlimited data with the hotspots. And so we would take those along on the way back from events. We would, our kids would get their devices out. We had worked with the company to develop a safety case that was lockable and we could keep track of so they didn't walk away during the athletic events from locker rooms, et cetera. And we found a lot of kids doing a fair amount of their homework on the way back from events. So I guess that's kind of the notes that I hit down. I'd be happy to answer any questions or clarify anything that I happen to skim over. Thank you.
I think, Kurt, I appreciate that comment, too, about the as you ramped up that dependence on technology, you really make technology mission critical to your organization, and that means that anytime there's a down, it's a hard down, and I think that's a really good point. Mark, I'm going to kind of kick the ball to you a little bit, and Mark is the shared superintendent between two school districts. He's a superintendent in Greenway and also in Nashua, Keewatin. And so can you speak to that dynamic and the importance of connectivity there, and also speak a little bit to the kind of the playing field leveling because of what you're seeing?
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Thank you, members of the council, for having us here, and we look forward to the ideas that will come out of this. I think I want to dovetail a little bit of a concept that you all mentioned earlier, first of all, regarding connectivity, because years ago there was a concept called Channel One. Although I don't necessarily endorse the commercials going to happen as a result of Channel One, the technology is there to do that at the next level up. And Joe's exactly right. There's no reason with the business and industry and corporate participation, if we truly mean that all learners are important and we're going to drive an economic engine in our state and our country, it can happen through that level of technology. That being said, I'm just going to support what Joe had to say earlier.
Just so the task force, for those members who didn't know, at one point in time, Channel One as an organization would come in and say, we'll put a television in every single one of your classrooms. Mm-hmm. If you turn it on from 8 to 8:15 in the morning.
It was news.
Yep, it was news, and yep, and it was, we're putting the technology in your school.
So there's no reason we couldn't do it at the classification or bus levels, as we indicated here, as being dead time for us in education. The part that Matt talked about in regard to connectivity in the districts that I represent, both these districts were SOD districts, financially headed for training. Academically, they have basically, or I was responsible for gutting a good portion of what we value as good core education, music, art, some of the fine arts, vocational, technical, because I couldn't afford it. So the only way that Greenway, Nashua, Keewatin are even in existence today is because they were wise enough to start sharing the superintendent. We share a business office. I run a $20 million budget of one office. It's just the collaboration. The only reason I'm even giving those examples is because of the collaboration. That's what IF stands for. I believe what our partnership with the Climate Foundation, the IRRB, stands for. But you all represent in your industries or in your businesses. The reality for us in making sure that all of our learners across IAP have the same opportunities are because of the connectivity, because the superintendents that were smart enough 25 years ago to put that fiber in the ground, they deserve a lot of credit. We're here today kind of reigniting or repurposing what that fiber means to us. In the two districts I represent, one's 1,000 or a little over 1,000 kids, and the other's about 650 kids. My students have the same opportunities now. I share classes with Matt. Next year, I believe there will be 17 opportunities that my students, Matt Schlock-Uwatt and Greenway, will have an opportunity to take that are a direct result of SIOS partnership and the connectivity we share. So if I could reinforce what the task force intention is, and that's to ensure that all rural Minnesota families, communities, have access to this type of technology, I'd be happy to satisfy the capital at any point, and I reemphasize that. Those of us that are up here living it and breathing it are more than happy to help any way we can. So, Matt, if I answer your questions, or I'd be happy to expand on other academic opportunities.
So, one thing, if I may, that Matt made earlier, and I think Fred and Kurt would echo, all of us here would echo, that the incentive towards collaboration and working together, because most of what we do now, districts really sort of are pulled back. They take care of their own based on boundaries and population. How does this work for me? And large schools large lobby for large schools, small districts lobby for small schools. We need to collaborate together. I think the IAC is an example of collaboration of both sides, districts together, because there's wins and goals. And there was in the past, better than I do, but in the past there was legislation that promoted and funds that promoted collaboration and working together between schools. Both, that funding disappeared. And there's some still remnants of legislation, but it can't act well as a ghost of what it was. It says it lays down too many restrictions that you must have only one superintendent.
Hmm.
And you must, Fred, you know some of the stuff that's in there. The reality of that is seven school districts, like I said before, adults are the voters,
mm-hmm.
and their alumni, their school colors, and their mascots. They don't want to give up the farmer that's running the house. They're not giving their superintendent up because that's the person that's looking out for the best of them. So for the legislature, and Margaret's part of that, to set up a rule that says, we'll give you a collaborative funding to dump your superintendent. It's setting too many false boundaries. You have to create realistic collaboration out there that will work instead of sort of fictitious kind of guy ones. I don't know if Fred wants to join on that or not.
Well, I don't know, Joe. You throw me a hot potato there. I think Joe's right. There's a lot of ways to encourage collaboration among districts, but the task force, as I understand, is supposed to focus on the broadband accessibility, which would enable those collaborations to work. And have I got like about 90 seconds to go through like three recommendations I'd like to enter into the policy discussion?
Yeah. As long as it's 90 seconds, Fred.
Okay.
Tell me when I should start.
You can start me now.
Okay.
The first one is, and these are in my printed remarks, is to standardize access standards. This is similar to how the railroad standardized the width of the rails. In other words, the PUC monitors all the telecoms in the state, actually regulates them. And perhaps the committee could consider recommending minimum connectivity for public services such as schools, hospitals, fire stations, cities, halls, libraries, to bring all those public serving institutions into the 21st century. And then to consider having minimum connectivity standards for homes. I know that's going to be a lot more difficult and expensive, but at least look at that and begin those discussions. The second one would be to develop private-public partnerships similar to the land grants that were given to transcontinental railroads to develop a market for products, you know, and encourage the development of connectivity. Perhaps this could be a state cost share for families based on free and reduced lunch qualifications to create a market in those schools like Little Falls where you got 50% free and reduced lunch students. There's many districts with those kind of percentages or even more in rural Minnesota. And finally, support some R&D at the university level to look into alternative deliveries of connectivity to homes other than DSL. I was kind of close to that work in Little Falls where they were trying to get some federal grants to do expanded Wi-Fi. I heard things about maybe Wi-Fi going up to 20 miles rather than just 2 miles, and be able to have fewer nodes using that approach. But that kind of research, there's many rural states in America, and if Minnesota could be a leader similar to, say, the medical devices research that turned into us as a leader in that field, it may actually be economically beneficial, but certainly beneficial to Minnesota. So that'd be three policy recommendations I would recommend to the committee.
Thanks, Fred. Are there any questions from the task force for Fred, Kurt, Jennifer is maybe probably not on anymore, Joe or Mark?
If someone has the education week about the hotspots on buses, we'd like that. I mean, surely you can probably find it quickly for us, too.
But, sure, I can do that. This is Fred Nolan.
Yeah, I actually have a group at the High Tech Association working on hotspots on Metro Transit buses right now, so I think there's transferability to all of that, so we'd just like to see that.
I'm also wondering, Kurt, if there was any research around positive impacts from on athletes as the result of the hotspots. That would be another good thing for us to have, probably.
I do not know or have anything like that. Sounds like a great doctoral thesis to me, though.
Yeah.
But I'll
come on that, aren't you, Kurt?
Pardon?
Aren't you working on that?
Oh, yeah. I'll start over on this one.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's a good question. The only place that I'm wondering where you might be able to find it, and I can look too, is the state of Maine has been doing a laptop project for about 6 years. And, you know, they're more than likely, you know, 6 years ahead of us in terms of those other side questions. So there might be something there.
Thanks, Kurt. Okay. Thanks for joining us, Kurt and Fred, on the phone. I, again, apologize for getting to you a little bit late and making you linger in space for a while. I think it was certainly helpful for some perspectives and opinions on what you're seeing. And Mark and Joe, I appreciate your local and kind of collaborative perspective, too.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. See you all.
Okay. We're adjusting schedule again, everyone. So we'll go on subgroup work time from 2:15 to 3. And we're going to play it by ear to see if we're actually going to be reporting back. I know that these guys actually need you to write down what you have done. I know someone's monitoring each one, but that will be important. But we may sort of scratch the report back because I think we do need to go through discussion of what's needed in the September report, which the staff will lead us through. And then we would like to just do other business, particularly this letter to Duluth about Dig Once and see if we have agreement or not. So subgroups, I think we have...
We need 45 minutes.
Well, maybe not. We've got three that are supposed to work.
So,
30? Okay. Well, let's go then 2:15 to 2:45 and be back together again. So let's see. Who are our leaders here? State of Broadband, is that you? Okay, Matt. Broadband adoption and monitor understand impact of FCC and PUC decisions. Who's that? Gary. Cost of broadband.
That's part of that.
Oh, there's only two.
Adoption.
Oh, sorry. I missed it. I see. I missed the, yeah, okay. So who has the smallest group, do we think?
Probably mine. I'm just me and you.
Okay, well, we'll go into that little room then and work that out. No. So, you want to take, my guess is maybe take the small room back there, Gary.
Sure.
And the other group meet here, and we'll figure out.
There's a room identical to that one just in there.
Okay, so we'll go do that. Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. Half an hour back together. Okay, very good.
Okay. All right.
I wondered about that.
Voices are
They're very similar. And I think, does anyone know if Doug Nolan's related to Rick Nolan?
Oh, I don't.
don't know right off.
Okay.
Yeah. Who can't access data network? No cell service now.
You know, Brian,
yeah. I wanted that, but I didn't want to.
Because I'm pretty sure we have a tweet that we're going to
tell
when if that's something that's almost for
yeah.
If that's the case. I know for Swan.
And then he has nothing north of Swan.
Right.
But.
I'll put this on Diane's computer.
Thank you.
I'll say it's from both of us. What? What is? Foley.
We're trying to figure out what Dead's talking about.
We're going to ask. We're kind of curious.
Yeah.
Because that seems.
With North Central.
Well, I'm speculating it's from his old stomping ground, which is here in Benton County, which is
kind of. In Morrison area?
And they did. I mean,
well, he wasn't aware of what
right.
So
I think we might
be
able
to old.
Yeah.
I don't know that Benton County's problems are probably involved.
A lot of the farms here.
Part of it's served by Rice Telephone Cooperative, which has fiber to home. Sorry, Andy, it's the century like area. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
And that's where we are on them. I mean, areas that are served and areas that are hard to serve that are subsidized by the U.S.
Well, and a lot of those are
more active. I'm sure this happening, but I just.
Yeah.
Just sort of looking good in practice.
Although at the end of one month out of that journal, I was going to get the other side of my net.
In fact, he doesn't send me
anything. Yeah.
Yeah, like what? Okay.
But you better check because maybe I'm speaking out of school. But
no, you are.
I find that it's sometimes better to speak out of school. Going to be sitting there and then going, I wonder what happened to this.
Yeah, the historical accident that where somebody drew a line. Not
Yeah, and Ben's well, Ben's how we started it. And then, once again, the partner that we all prayed to that now,
well, and you know, it'll be interesting to have to do this.
I know. The other one that what about the Chamber of Commerce?
Well, you know, there isn't, you know, the statewide chamber is like political, you know. So, can have every local chamber to do.
Well, that's what it would be.
That
might be a little, like,
movie. Everyone learning their own lesson about how to do this. And so much of it is common. I mean, so if you look at MediCom, there's all things.
Yes, we're going to do that next. I think we should jump to that. We're talking about this first. This being fine, and then distribution channels.
Next, Minnesota.
No, we don't want to be in that.
Good answer.
I've already looked into that. But is this one ultimately, I think. What do you think they're looking for? Probably good. It's probably good. It's always been a year now. There's like somebody else bought that one. When you just said about real estate, I think that's the they're welcoming
people. Yeah,
it's in
their
business.
Development Commission. I don't know. Well, the
Owners
about to own it, yeah.
So it's your idea.
And
mostly. I'm sorry. You can talk a little bit. Do you want me to do that?
Yeah, you can do a backdrop.
Okay, backdrop of what
So you guys have seen the plan, the goal, my story, and people have been adding little things here. The next step was to, okay, how we need to have it. Where should it go? So I had reached out to Bill and said, a domain name, where do you pay for that, and where do you go? So then as we, I reached out to Diane. You know, and looking at their website, they use links to certain options. It doesn't, it's not the system that it is. I'll call it a learning portal. And we have just a so every community online, the location.
Now let me pull it up.
What?
This internal network?
Well, I VPN'd in.
Because when I pull it up through the school network, access denied. ConnectMN.org is categorized as.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
That way you just click on it, it says rated on. I have to talk to my web people.
No kidding.
You're peddling what? Okay.
So then, okay, I actually signed up. So I could go, it's interesting because some of the. So basically takes me out of the audience. But we said, part of this was like, oh, you know what? I don't want. And that can still stay there, I think. I mean, that's a connecting with those things. There's some other programs. I wouldn't advocate changing them. But I think there's another location for this. Off of their main site. Whatever we end up calling.
Right.
Is there something, people would just click into. And then we said, you know, it can fit in the smaller form.
Yeah, I think our guys, our folks, that's what sort of the next round of the discussion. They're have its own tab. I think it should have its own tab or be, house. We sort of create a more robust task force presence in that with the director.
Well, and I'm thinking, I don't care if we tie to the task force because the task force is.
Yes, I mean, I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
So my comment is, I think it'd be cool if this had its own URL, was it inside? So if it's housed on a server that can give me that access from the outside would be one step. I mean, here's this toolkit.
Oh, you can
not a subcase, not a subtab on Connect. I mean, the external user would look like a old web address.
Put a broadband toolkit.
But I think that you can.
Well, you could do that.
You could do that in this
direction.
Yeah, and it would do it directly. So that it would look like, so that when you came onto it, you weren't going first to a flat door of Connect Minnesota, but that, or anywhere. This is not about Connect Minnesota, but the user, but directly to the user.
I
would
have to
talk
to
technical people. Well, okay, we've done things that work. So you, technically, have to set up. If you want a certain target, we'd almost have to. That'd have to be a different domain. And so we, again, with that, we'd have to figure out who would pay for that and things like that.
My second question is, what do we know, though, about the future
for longevity of this connection. First funding goes away and the jobs are doing
well. Right.
Funding
for the
grant.
The funding for the grant ends in 2015.
Right.
Now, I think that's debatable whether the grant money will pay. We don't know that. And then we don't know how we'll get funded.
Yes,
so.
And maybe it's okay to make the decision. You're aware of the church's. It's not like the extension that we know is, you know, and maybe it's something that can later be what we do now and later address that down the road, but I just wanted to be mindful at this point that it's unknown.
You could make it self-contained.
But yeah, I think it's pretty. Yeah, the idea of going directly to the URL is that you don't have to filter through whatever consumer ideas is what they may or may not feel about photo or extension.
Part of what I think the discussion needs to be around it, housing it in Connect Minnesota somewhere, however it's benefit. But the work we're doing here is part of the grant, which is the size of the scope of this work. Whether it's having
yeah, whether they find mapping and say, oh, hey, now
right.
I can
see, yeah. Feedback or helping to inform policy at the federal and state level, connecting to other resources and tools.
So you know, we're looking at toolkits, how likely is that? I mean, if a person's going in and just kind of looking. How likely is it that oh, we have to have some kind of a name that we can
get URL. There's even a bigger
yeah.
I mean, to me, with this, marketing.
Yeah.
yeah. Or, you know,
I think it's a good way to get started. I think
that's people living in the world. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Everything will be locked down. Everything.
Creating a numbers only
sample.
Yeah, direct URL. I don't think that would be good. But I would have to figure out. Well, when we do that work, I mean, I
but what I think is that the task force, one of our recommendations is to be ongoing in the future.
Commerce study.
Yeah,
okay.
Like,
they're pretty complex.
It's pretty slim.
Well, and that's one of the elements of having it up is in part, we are, our job, our mandate is to support the work that we have. This Diane and I falls under that. So, you know, we can justify staff time to update it or to based on this is part of our grant. no cost out there that's not already.
I found that there's a lot of stuff we talked about stories.
Actually, not the stories.
Well, people have already posted here some things about broadband as well. To me, it is what's on YouTube. Some of the stuff's already there. I mean,
right.
Yeah, there's. That has
those sounded very familiar.
Those, were they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Latin broadband community.
They were all on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yep.
We have a YouTube channel.
I'm just thinking, when we, so we, one of the initiatives that the foundation was involved in was to create a one-stop, no-run door, front door to support families. And it was sort of a combination of maps, resources, you know, reference materials. It wasn't curricula, but it had a range of resources to support family support. And they did a lot of research about. So where would people go for information? Viable and valid. State government does not make this on free. But the University of Minnesota. I don't know. It's just something for us to bear in mind. It's not, I think we need to look not only at what's doable, but where is the public likely. It's not used. Absolutely. Oh, right.
So is the public the audience or is it librarian?
Our target audience is Minnesota. That's how broadly we have it. But if you say, are we targeting rural first? But, you know, it might be more realistic to target. Yeah.
And you know, if they're needing real basic skills help, they're probably not going to be accessing it on their own because they're more basic.
Mm-hmm.
Did we have a question from the phone, from the cell phone? Call in.
Well, we did have, so in our other model, we talked about we said people that serve others, but
the people that serve others,
economic development,
and where it would be held, like maybe.
Well, the beauty of having that single address is that it could be collected then from anywhere.
Yeah.
viral? I'm ready to start recording, Shirley.
Not ready yet.
Bump.
I gotta get a... No, we need costumes. Yeah, we gotta get a script. We need to have... I'll be cut.
Shirley could be wireless.
Shirley can be wireless. I want to be wireless.
Could be microwave then.
Yeah, I'm going to be light. Light, okay, let's move on.
Excellent.
What we have done at this cost, residential
I love that.
Two for three. That's a big average.
Well, I've got two.